All right, let's set the scene. It's a Friday night in December of 1997. I am 13 years old, newly 13. I am at the Mall St. Vincent in Shreveport, Louisiana, your very typical cross-section of Middle America Mall. There's a Gap. There's a Baby Gap, was all the rage. There's a B. Dalton Booksellers. There's Dillard's. There's Claire's. All the classics. I'm sure I begged my mother for 20 things in Claire's, and I probably got, you know, some little unicorn earrings for $4 or something. But we get our ticket to Titanic at the mall's movie theater. This was not necessarily anything out of the ordinary. We were a movie family. Whereas some families are sports families, some families are technology families and, you know, latest video games and equipment, we were movie people. That's what we were. We were a very low-tech family in the 90s. Going to see whatever new movie had come out that weekend was just what we did. I didn't know much about Titanic at all, which seems so strange to say now that I do this for basically a living. So we go to eat at this place called Garfield's in the mall, which is basically Chili's. And I got a cherry Coke and a burger, I'm sure, and some fries. And wrote on the tablecloth, you know, those types of restaurants used to have paper tablecloths for kiddos. And then we walked across one of the interior hallways of the mall. And we got our seats and we watched Titanic. On December 19th, 1997, I didn't really know what to expect. I'd seen the People magazine articles. I'd seen, you know, a couple photo shoots running around of Leo and Kate. I'd seen Romeo and Juliet. I knew Leo was, you know, a movie star or almost one, getting to be one. So my expectations were just, I don't know, middling. Not much. And when I left the theater that night, I cannot exaggerate this. My whole personality was changed. I became not just a movie person, but kind of an epic movie person. I was in shock and enamored of what was possible on the big screen. This was the big scale setting for my brain in terms of movies and cinema. And I also just left the theater, I think, not an adult, but definitely a teenager, not a child. I was a very late developer in terms of teenagehood. But I left that theater in love desperately with Leonardo DiCaprio, and I think a little bit Kate Winslet as well. It just fueled it pumped in my blood. I went back 12 more times in the theaters. I drove everybody in my life crazy. I begged everyone to go multiple times. I wrote fan fiction, imagined that Jack didn't die. I took a video camera that my dad had and with a friend of mine would have sleepovers where we'd sing My Heart Will Go On and film snippets from the movie or what we could remember from the movie at the time because we hadn't come out on VHS yet. You know, my sort of internal brand was born, and I want to unpack some of that today, and I think it's the same for a lot of you. I mean, flash forward 25 years, and I'm going to sit down tonight and watch it as a celebration, and I am 38 years old. I have two children. One is 6, one is 8. My husband is fantastic and wonderful. He's a software engineer. I am a podcaster, I'm a historian, I'm a writer, I'm a lot of different things, but many of the things that I am, especially podcaster, is directly in line with how my brain changed and how my heart changed coming out of that movie. And if that sounds drastic, so be it. If you think I'm crazy, if you think I'm nutty, I don't care. But, you know, through this podcast, I have met enough of you all and know that it's a very similar story. So this is an incredibly special episode. This is a non-scripted episode. This is probably my favorite episode to sit down and do. I'm Ellie Beatles, and this is the 25th anniversary of Titanic, the film, created, directed, written, produced by James Cameron, who I adore to the end of time. Please at me about it. I will never stop. I can't wait to talk about this. And included in this episode are submissions from you guys, my listeners. There are voice notes. There are written notes. That's all coming. Stay tuned. All right, let's do this. Okay, rapid fire. You ready?
I'm as ready as I'm going to be.
Okay, favorite character in the movie?
These are hard questions.
This is one question I have asked.
Fabrizio.
Okay. Rose, obviously. Okay, favorite scene?
I mean... my favorite scene now or my favorite scene when I was 13?
I'm just kidding. Oh, not the car.
They're the same scene.
Oh, yeah. The drawing scene. Let's be sophisticated and call it the drawing.
Yeah, the drawing scene.
You like seeing the art. You like seeing the art. Listen, I hold out hope that Kate Winslet will come on this podcast. Please be respectful.
I am being respectful. Okay. She would respect that.
You know what? You're right.
What about? I mean, I'm just being honest.
You're right. Okay. What do you think my favorite scene is?
Your favorite scene? Mm-hmm. The staircase.
No, I think it's still the flying scene.
Oh, the flying scene.
But I change from year to year. Okay. Because it is important to be balanced. Okay, we're going to do most moving scene and the most ridiculous scene. Most moving scene.
The most moving scene? I mean, it's probably just the end, right?
Which one? When she reunites?
When she dies and she meets up with Jack in the Titanic.
I know.
That's great.
I think that's my answer too. Yeah. Everybody, I have to be honest, everybody's answer, it's because they think it's like the school answer they need to give is like the band playing or the mom with their two kids. Now that is moving.
But I think
people give those answers sometimes because they're scared to say that some of the romantic stuff is their favorite moving scene. Mm-hmm. Okay. Most ridiculous scene.
I mean, you could also say that the fact that she throws the heart of the ocean into the ocean is ridiculous, but for me, it's Lewis Abernathy. When he's given the rundown of Rose's life,
it's ridiculous. Couple of kids!
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, Lewis Abernathy is the gem of the whole movie.
I agree.
In a way.
It's fantastic.
All right. Final question. You've seen it not nearly as many times as I have. That would be hard to achieve, and I don't wish that for you. You've probably seen it that many times through a wall.
Yeah, I've heard it a bunch.
But now that you have seen it at various junctures throughout your life from 13 to 38, what do you think, why do you think it endures? What do you think is so magical about it? Any answer is fine.
It's the very definition of, like, cinematic, right? Like, I think that's just it. Like, in 97, it was mind-blowing, and it still is. I think Titanic probably lends itself especially well to this because we have no real photos or videos or anything of the sinking. It's all based on the way people retold it. And so
memory is so fallible.
And memories, and it's fallible, right? So we don't have these clear images of what the sinking must be like. And I feel like
But now we do. This
is really like the canon for what it must have been like. And I think that endures.
Do you think anyone's ever going to try to remake it or do another?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they will, but it will not. It will fail. They'll use too much CGI and it'll fail spectacularly. Nobody shoots water like Jim Cameron does.
Spoiler alert for Avatar.
It's fantastic.
I don't think it's a spoiler when it's called the Way of Water. It is worth going to see the new Avatar just for the water. He understands how water works.
And as silly as that sounds, like, it's really important.
All right. And tell everybody your most perfect dream afternoon with Kate Winslet. I think it's also mine.
That's
No. Listen, and that, to be clear, that's fine with me. You get a, there's a hall pass card ready. Yeah. It's fine. Yeah. But that aside.
I don't know.
You said you wanted to have a beer with her.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he'll probably be having a beer and watching football, honestly.
Yeah. Like soccer.
Yeah.
To Americans.
Yes, yes.
But
yes.
We, yeah.
Yes, of
yeah.
course.
You, not everybody knows
that. I don't know if she's into it, but probably.
I bet she is.
I bet she wouldn't be.
I imagine she is.
Seems that way.
Just somebody help me get her on the show and let's find out.
Yeah.
You know, dreams come true.
Maybe she's a Liverpool fan.
I think she lives in Brighton. I what mean, team would that be?
Well, Brighton.
I don't know anything. Kate, let me know. All right. Well,
or let me know.
Or let John know, okay? I will hyperventilate, so go through John first. Thank you for always being willing to come on whenever I'm talking about a retrospective of the movie.
You're welcome.
I love you.
I love you.
You're my Jack.
Oh, you're my Rose.
I'm Jack Dawson.
Rose DeWitt Peek Hitter.
I have to get you to write that one down.
All right. First things first, I want to extend a huge thank you to my latest Patreon members. I want to thank Joe and Blake. I say it every time because it's true every time. It means the world, your support does. And it quite literally allows this podcast to keep going. Patreon does. I do not run a lot of ads. I run a few ads here and there as part of Buzzsprout, which is my hosting service, because it helps keep the hosting service, the cost there down. So I do that occasionally, but I really am trying to avoid letting this podcast be taken over by ads, which I have seen happen to a lot of podcasts I like, and I don't know that it's the best avenue. So I really love Patreon, and I encourage you, if you're interested in helping support this podcast go on in the long term, definitely consider becoming a Patreon member. There are a lot of different tiers to join. This month, the bonus episode, which posts at the end of every month, is going to be a reaction pod to Avatar: The Way of Water, which I saw as I'm recording this last night. Now, I will save my thoughts with the reaction pod for the most part. And trust me, there are no spoilers coming. It's very hard to spoil this movie anyway, but you can keep listening if you haven't seen it. I'm not about to give any spoilers. I just want to say a couple of quick things. One, I did take my children to see it. My husband and I took our children, and they are 6 and 8. I suspect a lot of questions that are floating out there are around this, like an age bracket for kids for this, since it is rated PG-13. I can't make that decision for you, obviously, and it's definitely a kid-by-kid basis. My 6-year-old is very mature for her age intellectually, but my son at 8, I think, is probably the more, I don't know, typical start for the bracket for this movie. Again, depends on your kid, but my kids loved it. Guys, they loved it. It just is such a testament to the magic and the technical achievement of James Cameron and what he does. They were leaving the theater screaming things like, "I knew that was a James Cameron movie. He made Titanic. And when is Avatar 3 coming out?" And they were so joyful. My son said at one point, he went with my son to the bathroom. And it is a lot. No shock. It's, 3 hours and 15 minutes. And so there's bathroom breaks, definitely be prepared for those. But my son said he took, or my husband said he took my son to the bathroom at one point, and my son, Robbie, was just gushing, just like, "Oh, we've got to be fast, Daddy. We've got to be fast. We have to get back to the theater. I can't miss a minute." So the magic is strong. This movie is amazing. I think that if you're hearing critics out there try to find any tiny little pinprick issues with it, that's just because in the take culture that we have online now with movie critics, with journalists, their bosses are telling them, come up with a take. Their bosses are telling them, come up with some sort of angle, find something wrong with it. But there is nothing wrong with it. It is so beautiful and so just mind-blowing. You have to go see it on the big screen, especially if you're a Jim Cameron or a Titanic person, which leads me to the second thing I will say, that without any spoilers, I am not giving any spoilers whatsoever, but I will tell you that if you are a Titanic person, and not necessarily a Terminator person or the Abyss person or an Aliens person, there are things in this movie that will speak directly to your soul in terms of being a Titanic James Cameron person. It's there. So I encourage you to go see it. And again, I'll have a reaction pod on Patreon at the end of the month. I'm sure it will keep coming up. But let me know what you think on Instagram. And, you know, probably, I mean, I don't know, maybe even end up bringing it up in this conversation a little bit more because it's so relevant just to the James Cameron conversation. I want to start by saying that, you know, I could have 1,000 thoughts about this movie. A lot of them I have already had. So number one, if you have not listened to the series that I did at the beginning of the year on the making of the movie, I recommend that. I did 5 episodes. I did one on just James Cameron's biography. I did one on the character of Rose. I did a 2-parter on just the making of the movie in Rosarito, Mexico. And I did essentially this episode already without it being the 25th anniversary where I just sort of broke down the cultural phenomenon in 1997. So if you listen to this episode and you think to yourself, wow, she really didn't like touch on everything, that is because so much I have already touched on. And today I'm opening some new windows with it sort of metaphorically. But go back and check that series I did. And I'm sure if you're thinking, why did I not bring up so-and-so? It's probably in there. So go back to that as well. I want to mention a quote I saw in an article the other day. In the Daily Beast, this writer named Kevin Fallon said about Titanic and about the 25th anniversary, quote, many films are great. Few films are formative, and only one is Titanic. There's never been a sentence that I wish I had written more, to be quite honest. I want to do something fun to sort of start off the conversation today. I want to list out the top 10 performing movies of 1997. Now, this is going to have Titanic at number 7, which is going to seem crazy to you. But the reason behind that is that when the year closed, obviously, the movie had only been out for about 1.5 weeks. Now, in that 1.5 weeks, Titanic did make $112 million, which is mind-blowing. But of course, it would go on to make much, much more. But I just want to list out the top 10 best performing movies at the box office 1997. Here we go. Number 1, Men in Black. Number 2, The Lost World, Jurassic Park. Number 3, Liar, Liar. Really a funny movie. And that one never gets mentioned anymore, but it's one of Jim Carrey's best. Air Force One, Star Wars, A New Hope, My Best Friend's Wedding, Titanic, Face Off, Batman and Robin, and George of the Jungle, which George of the Jungle feels so topical right now because Brendan Fraser is having this well-deserved sort of renaissance, and that's obviously another story, but it's just funny to think of him in George of the Jungle and the culture we had in 1997. That was the kind of movie that was being made with a movie star like him. Anyway, love Brendan Fraser. This list does a really good job of laying out how big movies used to be, how much movies were the monoculture experience of the time, that all 10 of these movies had space. All 10 of these movies were their own moment within 1 year. It's crazy to think that all these came out in 1 year. These are all iconic. These are all like show up on people's top 10 of all time lists. These are all rewatchable. And if they pop up on cable, you stop what you're doing and you watch them. And they all came out in 1997 because, you know, the internet was in our lives, but it wasn't controlling our lives. You know, people played video games, but it wasn't, I don't know. It wasn't like a, I play video games all day, I don't do anything kind of culture that we have a little bit now. You know, obviously people have always been into sports and that's on TV, but it wasn't on TV all the time. It was on at certain times. And if you didn't catch it when it was on TV, it's not like you could stream it online and YouTube or whatever. So that really wasn't taking up a lot of people's time. But movies did. I mean, movies were the water culture. Oh my gosh, Avatar is in my head. Movies were the water cooler thing. You know, if you wanted to be part of the conversation, if you wanted to be part of what Saturday Night Live was talking about, if you wanted to understand what was going on the late night shows, if you wanted to understand who was on the cover of magazines, if you wanted to talk about and perform within monoculture in America at all, you had to go to the movies. So Titanic was not, when it released on December 19th, 1997, yes, it was already mired in all this drama about production. But if you take that out of it, it wasn't weird that there were so many big epic movies coming out in one year. And I feel like now we live in such an anemic movie world. And that's one of the reasons Avatar is such a big deal. But what's sad is that, you know, Avatar, Black Panther, Top Gun came out this year. Those seem like the real tentpole movies this year. And there's not a lot of space for anything else. Yes, those three movies are going to make a lot of money in 2022. But no other movie's really making any money. Whereas you look at this list and you have a rom-com, In My Best Friend's Wedding, which is one of the best of all time, making a ton of freaking money. You've got Air Force One, which is this thriller adult drama. So, you know, it just makes me sad when I go back and I see something like this. I, as a movie person, it's just, it's it's very disgruntling to see how far we've fallen. And I think what makes it worse is that now, because of the internet, we have this take culture. So film journalism is mired in this constant need to grab whatever take is there, you know, get a headline, get a BuzzFeed listicle, like, you know, phrase go. I know I sound 80 years old. I sound like Gloria Stewart. It's been 84 years. But, right, don't y'all agree? Like, the big trend in terms of Titanic online or in movie podcasts tends to be like, oh, let me joke about how Titanic's actually not as good as we thought it was. It totally is. I mean, if you look, oh, gosh, I am the most liberal. No, everybody do whatever they want to do or like whatever they want to like, no matter, you know, as long as it's not hurting anybody. But this take culture seems malicious to me, because not only is it singling out things that people, you know, have a very innocent and earnest passion for, but then it seems to sort of maliciously like pick at it, like with, like, almost as if you had a surgical tool and you were just like making it bleed for no reason. Like, what has happened to you in your life? Not you guys, but anyone writing like this. What has happened that you need to sit down at a desk, pick out a movie from 25 years ago that you don't personally like, and that's fine. But why do you need to take surgical tools to it and make it bleed? Just to fire people up. But I guess that's the answer in itself, right? Is that's what everything is about these days. I don't want to stop here and lose too much energy to negativity, and I won't name any names, but, you know, I just want to say I'm aware there are some podcast episodes, some articles out there floating around that have the opposite view that I have, you know, that are posing questions like, quote, is Titanic as good as we thought it was? And, you know, let these people do what they want. But we know the truth, and we're going to celebrate and have a positive attitude. We know the truth here, which is that 25 years ago, a movie that was a generation maker arrived. It was a generation maker in the sense that it gave a whole generation a sense of what was possible on screen, a sense of scale, a sense of epic movie making. And it also emboldened an entire generation of particularly teenage girls, although I've heard from many, many men who listen to this podcast, it affected them when they were teenagers as well. There's also many gay and lesbian men and women that affected it. And so I don't mean to say, oh, it's just a generation of girls because it was Leo. That is not what I am implying at all. But I do think historically what happened is that there were particularly a large group of teenage girls that were emboldened by this movie. And I was one of them. And it wasn't just about the sex. It was not just about wanting Leo, wanting Jack Dawson, or wanting Kate, wanting Rose. That was part of it. And I think it's okay that that was part of it, because teenage girls are sexual and are deserving of exploring those parts of themselves. But it emboldened a whole group of teenage girls to love film, to express their passion unequivocally about something and to hang on to this idea of eternal love and hope and joy. I think that that should be celebrated instead of tamped down. And I've said it before and I'll say it again, and this was not an original thought. I have heard this on many episodes about this film of different movie podcasts that I love. The things that girls tend to obsess over, the things that teenage girls tend to fall in love with, are the things that tend to be beat up in pop culture. Those are the things that tend to get the most questions. And I think as a culture, we have a real problem when, and I don't understand why, but we tend to have a real cultural problem when girls become obsessed with something. We just as the proverbial, we tend to want to, you know, strip them down, make fun of them, call something out as girly, call something out as a chick flick if it pertains to movies. But anything that girls obsess over, we tend to find silly. And anything that boys obsess over, we tend to find cool and nerdy and, oh, that's, you know, like Star Wars or Star Trek, or, you know, it doesn't even have to be a movie. It could be a video game or whatever it may be. But if it's something that's swarmed by girls, then we tend to discount it. And that makes me really, really, really sad. So just prefacing all this by saying that I'm aware there are multiple takes out there. I'm aware some people don't like the movie. That's fine. But if you're here, let's talk about how much we love it. When I was trying to come up with a way to organize this episode, I really was coming up empty, which sounds really weird because this movie, as I've already said 20 times in this episode, is a true part of my personality. But I feel like I've already said a lot. I feel like a lot of people have already said a lot. And I wanted to come to this with some sort of fresh take. So what I did is I called for submissions from you guys a couple of weeks ago. And I said, tell me your 1997 story. And I got so many responses, such a beautiful thing. And so I listened and I read, and once I went through all of your submissions, it became clear that this is how I needed to organize this episode on the 25th anniversary, that it's all about you guys. And when I started to go through them, the submissions, I realized that there were a lot of themes that kept popping up. So I want to talk about those. One of the most important, and when I say that Titanic, you know, becomes or became part of someone's personality, became part of mine, one of the most important themes that I've seen pop up in the submissions that you sent this time, in comments I see on Instagram, in conversations I have with people in real life, is Titanic as a source of sexual awakening. I have had conversations in real life with people that aren't even connected to or listen to this podcast about this. There seems to be a lot of people like me that kind of awoke to any form of sexual desire because of Leo, because of Jack Dawson, or because of Rose and Kate Winslet. And then there also seem to be a really increasingly vocal group of people that credit this movie with them learning about and embracing their own bisexuality or the fact that they were gay or lesbian. I saw, I wish I could remember where it was and I would go and screenshot it. I was reading an article a few months ago, just like a silly little, here are interactions that people have had about celebrities on Reddit. And then here are some, you know, like real life celebrity encounter stories from Reddit. And one of them was a man who I believe was my age when Titanic came out. And he saw Leonardo DiCaprio at a premiere or a club or something. I don't know, somewhere out in LA. And he ran up to him and he said, you know, I know you don't like to be bothered by people. I really don't want to bother you, but I just want to use this opportunity to tell you that, you know, seeing Titanic, seeing Jack Dawson and Titanic made me realize my own sexuality and embrace it. And apparently Leo was very kind and about that comment and spoke to him for a few minutes and really enjoyed that he had shared that. So it's a very common theme. And I'm aware that it still happens with films today. I'm aware that it happens with all sorts of films for all sorts of different people. But I think particularly for Titanic, it's one of the reasons that it's been so enduring and endearing. I think the way that Cameron set up this movie is obviously the back half is an action movie. He's James Cameron. He's not going to leave that situation without making an action movie. And in the second half of Titanic, I've heard a lot of you say that, you know, becomes one of the best action films of all time, 100%. But the first half of the movie is a love story. And James Cameron takes a lot of flack for how he wrote the dialogue. He takes a lot of flack for the sappiness and the cheesiness of it. But there's a reason why it endures. It's because some of us may badmouth parts of that, you know, in the open because we feel guilty for how much we love it. But I don't know if it was an accident. It might have just been a total accident. But James Cameron wrote such a pure story of two people who do not want to change anything about the other. And so much of what we are fed when we are children, and especially when we are young teenagers, is about changing ourselves. It is about changing our hair, tanning our skin, being as thin as possible. You know, whether it was 1960s when you were growing up or the 1990s or now, this is the theme that, you know, teenagers are a transitional group of people. They are hormonal and they are seeking out answers. And unfortunately, what ends up happening is they are getting a lot of messages from whatever pop culture is at the time about what an ideal body is, you know, especially for women. And Kate Winslet has been really open and talked about a lot of this in terms of her own life and the media coverage. And you can Google all of that. I am not going to, you know, regurgitate all of that. We've seen all of those articles. And she really, really openly speaks about it still. I mean, she was just on Happy, Sad, Confused last week talking about it. So I encourage you to seek that interview out, the really recent one. But we have all this pressure when we're teenagers to look a certain way, sound a certain way, do certain things. And that is just tied up with our romantic partners we're seeking out, the awakening of our sexuality, thinking about what kind of person we want to be with or marry one day or whatever it may be. What Jim Cameron did was put two people together that are, you know, they've been through things in their life. Jack has lost his parents. He has no money. He's a drifter, a wanderer. He's, you know, as happy-go-lucky as Jack Dawson is. Of course, he has trauma as well. You have Rose's character in this maddening situation she finds herself in. They both are, I mean, I think Jack is 20, but they're both essentially teenagers. They certainly look it, you know, especially Leo. They are thrown together and they are enamored and obsessed with one another immediately in a physical and an emotional sense. And neither one wants to change anything about the other one. They both love the karma that each other are giving out. And it is the most pure thing. You know, Rose doesn't care if Jack has not a penny to his name or that he, you know, has floppy hair and suspenders and makes bad jokes, but he's got that smile and those eyes and that kindness and that care for her. And she's in 100%. And Jack, in terms of Rose, like he sees a woman with immense beauty, immense intellect, fiery, passionate, contradictory, a spoiled brat, as he calls her, but he doesn't want to change a thing. He says in the gym scene, "What I love about you." He already knows. He already sees she is this person that doesn't need to be tamed or changed. She needs to be who she is. So I think in the simplest way, that's what Cameron did. And I think because that is so apparent and simple and earnest, that these are two people that fall in love with each other the way that they are, besides just the sexual attraction that as teenagers we may have had to Kate or to Leo or to Cal. I've heard for some people that, you know, Cal really did it for him. But I think that's why, because it opened up a very innocent and sweet and just honest place to have those feelings and to feel like ourselves. So I, you know, that's a theme that I see again and again, and I'm sure people have written about it, but I just wanted to point out it seems to be a big theme in what I received from you guys. The other theme that pops up so much in submissions from you and things I see online is how well the movie holds up. That having been made in 1997 is almost irrelevant. That if you pop on the movie today, it looks as good as it did the day we saw it in 1997, and it evokes the exact same emotions. And I don't think this is something to be taken lightly, because so many movies don't hold up. I mean, in my own life, that's the case. There are many, many movies that I loved as a child, and when I go back as an adult, it's just, it's not there. You know, it doesn't, the connection, the whatever neurons in my brain, you know, that fire to my heart when I love a movie just aren't working the same way. And the magic's kind of gone. But I hear that from a lot of you, that it's something maybe you walked away from for 15 years or 20 years, maybe 25 years at this point. I got an email from someone that the other day just kind of saying, hey, found the podcast, and they hadn't watched it in 25 years, and then watched it, found the podcast, and now they're down the rabbit hole. But that is a top thing I hear, that it holds up. And it does. And I think the main reason that it does hold up is, and I've talked about this many times, and I talked about it in the making of episodes earlier this year, James Cameron took the time to build sets. And obviously a lot of them are models, but they're built models, physically built. They are not a digital creation. They are models that are zoomed in on. He built the sets. He built the models. Obviously, there's some CGI in it that, if you look closely, you know, is like, you can kind of tell. But because the combination of all of those effects is so frenetic and well done and well organized, pretty much just creates a seamless experience that defies time and puts Titanic in that category with Lawrence of Arabia, you know, with Ben-Hur. These movies that nobody questions that they are epic, because they are. You know, inevitably, when you have a conversation about James Cameron bringing something this epic to the screen in 1997, you then have a conversation about what has come after. And I cannot credit this as an original thought. I have listened to several other podcast episodes about the movie this week, and several people have pointed this out. It's a pretty generic comment about the film. But James Cameron really pioneered this idea that a movie could be 3 hours and, is it 3 hours and 16 minutes, could be over 3 hours long, and that was necessary to bring the story to filmgoers. You have a runtime of a movie now in 2022, commonly coming in at 2.5 hours, when that was, you know, prior to about 20 years ago, even that was unheard of for a mainstream movie. But you've got mainstream movies coming in at 2:45, 3. The Irishman from last, was it 2 years ago, Martin Scorsese did, you know, I think it was 3.5 hours. I mean, it's not uncommon now for the average film that you're told, hey, this is great, go see it. And you walk into a movie theater, you sit down, and you realize 2 hours in, you've got to pee, and this movie is nowhere near done. Tar, which is an Oscar frontrunner this year with Kate Blanchett, pretty sure it's 3 hours and 10 minutes. That's a Todd Field film. That's hard to say. So I think James Cameron is responsible for that in some ways. His movies are often called bloated, but I think if you are a James Cameron fan, you would argue that he's actually an excellent editor, and that everything's left in, that's left in, is necessary. And that is how I feel about it. But I think he really ushered in the normalcy of these long movies. And then that is a direct line to the Marvel Universe and the, you know, the length of Marvel movies, the popularity of Marvel movies. I think James Cameron really ushered in this idea, because of how much Titanic made, because of how big a cultural moment it was, he did open up this window of, hey, let's make these big spectacle films, let's incorporate CGI as the CGI technology gets better and better, and let's make just a shit ton of money, and let's get people in the chairs for multiple viewings, because that was such a big part of Titanic's legacy when it was in theaters as well. It was the multiple viewings part of it. I think there's a direct line, and I can't deny it. I don't think anybody would deny it. Personally, I believe that Cameron's films are long for a good reason. And I am not a Marvel person. I tend to think that someone like James Cameron's movies still stand very much apart from the Marvel universe in the way that they are constructed and the care that is taken with them. I'm going to get in a lot of trouble for saying this, but if you listen to the podcast, you know this is not a new thought. The Marvel movies don't speak to me. It is very obvious to me that they are, the production on them is rushed. It is very obvious to me that CGI and green screen has taken over the whole process. And it's just, I'm not interested in that, you know? And maybe someone's response to that would be, but look at Avatar. Avatar to me is just a different thing. The motion capture is a different thing. The artistic achievements that Cameron is making with Avatar to me stand as a separate thing. Come at me. Let's talk about it. But that is how I feel. So how the movie holds up is a complicated conversation. I just want to say I'm aware of that. But I do think that probably top three comment I hear about Titanic is, it was on cable the other night. I hadn't seen it in 20 years. Sat down, watched the whole thing, forgot. Yeah, this is amazing. And every single second held up. I hear myself in your stories in so many other ways. You know, I mentioned dressing up and recording video with my friend April that I unfortunately have lost contact with. And she was my middle school best friend. And we would have these sleepovers and we were total nerds. We were we were the kids in the corner of the room with books, unpopular, pimples on our face, a little bit overweight, hadn't figured out our bodies yet, hadn't figured out how to do our hair. Not that any of that matters, but it does matter on some level. Like, it's how you style yourself is such a part of your personality and whatever it may be, and anything's fine, but we hadn't landed on what any of that was yet. So we were just these awkward looking 13-year-olds, but she was a very, very dear friend of mine because we could connect over that. And we would have these sleepovers, we would eat ice cream, we'd get the video camera out and we'd film ourselves against the wall singing My Heart Would Go On. We'd reenact a couple of the scenes from the movie. One of us would be Jack, one of us would be Rose, then we'd switch. And I hear that and I see that in your stories as well. Many of them mention dressing up, role playing, singing, and My Heart Will Go On is its whole other thing, and I'm not going there today. So I see myself and I feel myself in those stories from you guys. When I say that this movie became part of my personality, I am not kidding. From age 13 through 19, I think, I actively stayed in touch with people that I met on fan forums, message boards about the movie. And I wrote fan fiction that back in the day, and fanfiction.net is still going strong. Highly recommend if that is something that makes you happy, like go for it because it is still there. But there was a huge heyday for fan fiction in the late 90s and early 2000s. And I was there, man. I wrote whole stories. I met, to this day, one of my closest friends, my good friend Shirley. I know she'll listen to this at some point because she is such a supporter of the pod and we're still in touch. And hi, Shirley, you're amazing. We met doing fan fiction. We are still close friends to this day because, listen to this crazy story, and I think this will round everything out. When I was thinking about how to organize this, I thought, how can I express to my listeners and to myself the full circle from 13 to now? And I think I found the perfect way. And it's a story about 2020 and the early pandemic. But also, first, let me say, in case I forget, I will not bore you with details of my life too much. I will not just sit here and give you a biography of me because it's a lot. But what you should know about me is that I come from a lot of trauma when I was younger. My mom died when I was 17. She was very ill most of my life. I came from a family that has and had loving people in it, but was not a cohesive unit. There was a lot of chaos. There was some trauma. And so my teenage years were, I'll be frank, not easy. I was not a popular person. I was doing my homework in the corner and kind of invisible. And a lot of it had to do with my own lack of self-confidence, which could be attributed to many things. And trust me, there's been many years of therapy in between then and now. So I'm on top of it. But my teenagers were not, you know, at the mall laughing and, you know, enjoying the best days of our lives. That's just not what it was. So Titanic was something that I latched onto and it fed me back. It gave back to me. I loved it and it loved me, which sounds so cheesy and I'm tearing up as I say it, but it is true. It was a light in the darkness. It was, you know, through the fan fiction and meeting other people like me that like this is something that they loved so much that they would go on in the middle of the night to an internet message board and reach out to other people. Such an amazing moment in time. But it gave back. It gave back through that. It gave back through rewatches and never getting old. It gave back, you know, through the song on the radio all the time and it being this cultural moment that we all shared. And because it is a language that we all understand to this day, it never stops giving back. So in case I made it through this whole episode without putting all of my cards on the table, I want to say at the core of everything, this movie gave back to me and helped me learn to love myself more in a time in my life where I wasn't doing that and things were hard. So yeah. And I will say that's very much tied into the conversation about Kate Winslet, you know, which she shares when she gives interviews now, which I mentioned earlier, that she took so much flack in terms of conversations about her appearance. And you know, what's crazy is that I don't remember any of that. And I know that was a trauma for her. And like I said, she has talked about it in interviews. So you can go find that so that you can hear her version. It's very important. To me, I saw this beautiful woman who came on screen and embodied, in my mind, the most important, you know, female character in film of all time. And she was graceful and smart and kind of kick-ass and emboldened and rebellious. And it helped build confidence in me. And I'm sure if I ever got to meet Kate Winslet in person, I would just become this, I'm already becoming it right now, would just become this blubbering mess of emotion. And just, I probably would cry all over her first. But from what I know about her, having listened to many interviews and watched many interviews, I think she's just the coolest person ever. I think you can just sit with her and put back a couple of beers and have a conversation about life that is honest and blunt. And so I think she probably would be fine with me just sniffling all over her first and crying and then getting to the point of things. But it's, yeah. So I just wanted to say that out loud finally before I say anything else. I probably will cry more as I tell this story too. But, you know, this podcast was born, and this is my full circle moment story I want to tell. This podcast was born in many ways because of the pandemic. So in the late spring, early summer of 2020, we were on lockdown, as most of us were. My husband has always worked for, or last few years has always worked from home. He's a software engineer, like I mentioned. So it wasn't weird for him to be working from home, but my kids were at home, not in preschool anymore. We didn't go anywhere. We 100% just, you know, masked at the grocery store and that's it. Nowhere else. We didn't see friends. We didn't see other family. We were truly at home. We would, you know, make cocktails in the evening and watch movies. And my husband would play World of Warcraft. And I actually, full disclosure, went online and started, you know, doing things like looking up Titanic fan fiction again, started rewatching the movie. And I think when we go through trauma, like the pandemic was for me and for all of us, when we go through trauma, I think our brains kind of revert to things that we loved when we were younger that were a comfort. And like I just mentioned, Titanic was the ultimate comfort thing for me. So my brain, I think, did like a childlike reversion back to it and sought it out. And I'm so glad that it did, because two things happened. One, I started telling John about my friend Shirley that I had known for quite a few years when I was younger, and we'd met doing this fan fiction stuff. And he said, you got to find her. You have to find her. She would want to know you again. You have to find her. And I went on Instagram, and lo and behold, there she was, and I found her. And we have been having a lot of wonderful, just productive and fun and, you know, honest conversations about Titanic the ship and Titanic the movie and all of our memories of all of that since. We've stayed in very close touch since. So that was such an amazing development to go back, embrace that part of my life and reconnect with someone. And then two, I started to reconnect with my love of the ship. And I haven't even talked about that, which is that coming out of the movie in 1997, it's this way for a lot of us, that's where I developed my love of the ship. I needed to put the energy of the love of this movie into other vessels, pardon the pun, but I sought out all of the real histories as well. I needed, as it goes when we're obsessed with things, I needed to find other ways to talk about, write about, think about this obsession. And so that's where my love of the ship came from. And of course, James Cameron wants us to, you know, when he made the movie, one of his main goals was to share these stories and get us thinking about all of the lives lost on the ship. And so it ties in forever with the movie. And that's a, you know, a conversation we've been having on the pod for over a year now. I reignited my interest in the ship itself in early pandemic. I ordered, I am not kidding you, 30 to 40 books from Amazon and from used bookstores online. And I just started reading, and I hadn't read in years. Started reading again. And that is how this podcast was born, because, you know, a lot, some more of the backstory is that, you know, I'm a historian. I have a PhD in history. Prior to having kids, I taught at the university level. I wrote, I researched, I, you know, wrote a dissertation. I would write articles for history journals. I had book reviews. I mean, that was the milieu that I was in. And I sort of left that milieu when I had kids and I was at home with kids. And this is how I re-entered the professional space as a podcaster, because of Titanic. And it has been the single most rewarding professional experience of my entire life. So I thank you for listening, because you're listening, I'm able to continue to grow this and make Unsinkable a lot of different things. And I'm excited about that, and more coming on that soon. So, you know, that whatever, I don't know, maybe it was a Thursday night in April of 2020 sort of sealed my fate in a lot of ways. But it's a full circle moment, because to be fulfilled, to find sort of my true path, I had to return to that 13-year-old. I had to return to that 13-year-old that fell in love with something. So anyway, it's really, you know, none of this is for show. I really do love this movie this much. I really do love the ship this much. I really do love this history this much. This is all real. So again, thank you for being here. I want to get to your submissions now. So I want them to just speak for themselves. I'm not going to do a lot of commenting on them. I've already kind of commented on the themes that are popping up in a lot of them. I just want you to experience all of them. And thank you for trusting me enough, if you submitted, to tell your story out loud and to share these really private and personal moments. Now, a lot of you did include your last name when you submitted things. I am not going to say last names. That's just sort of a general philosophy that I have on the pod. So I'll just share first names, but here we go. And then, I don't know, I don't know what else to say except hear all of the, like, listen to all of these stories and feel your own, because if you're here, you probably have one of your own. And then, I don't know, whatever is your cozy thing of choice, you know, a cup of hot cocoa or a nice whiskey ginger or a nice cold glass of lemonade and your feet up on the couch. Like, whatever your cozy beverage, get in position thing is, do that and watch this movie again. Even if you know you love it and you watched it within the last few years, and put it on tonight. You know, go back to that moment, put some comfortable pajamas on, and just go back to that moment and let yourself be 7 again or 13 again or 22 again, whatever it may be. Embrace the things about yourself that a lot of the world might call cheesy or silly. No, that's, if it's you, it's you. And I cannot emphasize enough how much I think all of those things come back tenfold. Ever since I sort of decided to put this podcast out into the world and put my nerd level obsession with Titanic out into the world, I have received nothing back but such amazing karma and love and kindness and community with you all. It's been one of the best experiences of my entire life. So watch the movie. Put it on. It's been 25 years. I know there's a lot of content online, and then we'll have probably more in February when the movie re-releases in February of 2023. I hope to do maybe a special episode then. I am still on my quest to get one of the actors from the movie on this podcast. Haven't done it yet, but I will. It'll happen. I have faith. I have faith. It's going to happen. So return to regularly scheduled ship programming after the turn of the new year. I've got a lot of exciting episodes coming on, but definitely look for something special in February as well. And in the meantime, I love you all. You're the best. So listen to either yourself or your fellow Unsinkable listeners and enjoy watching the movie. Enjoy your holiday. Enjoy the very tail end of your 2022. Okay, so I'm going to start with the written submissions, and then I'm going to end with the voice ones. First one, this is from Rachel. It goes by Ray. Hey, LA. I hope I'm not too late to submit my 97 story. You weren't. If not, here it is. I genuinely cannot remember a time when this movie wasn't a part of my life. I was there years old. I'm pretty sure she means three. I was 3 years old when it came out in cinemas and 4 or 5 when I first saw it on VHS. I can't remember that first viewing, obviously, but my family loves to remind me that I was obsessed with the sinking scenes. Apparently, I would ask my mom every time to put it on, would watch about 5 minutes, and then get her to fast forward to the dying part, as I called it. Super cringe to think about, but honestly, even now, the topics I find myself drawn to are things most would probably think morbid, and I credit that to just how formative this movie was for me at such a young age. And that's an excellent point, side note, and I feel the same. Naturally, as I grow older, I began to watch and understand the movie as a whole. It has always been my favorite, even though I have changed a lot as a person over the years, and I think it's a testament to its quality that different fictional plot points resonated with me at different ages. For example, as a teen, it was always Jack's death that made me cry, but in my early 20s, it was seeing all of Rose's photographs and knowing she went on to do so much with her life after coming so close to taking it. Good point. We don't think about it that way enough. Now at 28, it feels more my happy place than anything. This movie has led me to many of my lifelong hobbies, namely learning about Titanic as a historical event, and I'm endlessly grateful for that. Also, I'm pretty sure Kate Winslet made me a lesbian. Only half joking. Anyway, thanks so much for reading my rant and making the best podcast I could have asked for. Thank you. Also, for so shamelessly loving this film that means so much to me. You are welcome, and I'll never stop. Cheers, Ray. Thank you, Ray. That was amazing. The next one is from Candy. This one came to me from an Instagram comment. Hello to all Titanic lovers. Hello. My story is sort of long. It's fine, and this is actually not that long. I discovered the ship Titanic when I was 8 years old in my third grade library. I was looking for a book to read when I came across this large book with a beautiful ship on the front of it. At the time the book was written, the Titanic had not yet been discovered. After reading the book and learning what had happened, I vowed to discover the lost Titanic. Later on, after doing my research, I then discovered that Robert Ballard had discovered the ship 3 years prior. Although disappointed, I continued to read and research all that I could about the unsinkable liner. I watched every movie ever made, but always felt that something was missing. Well, until Titanic was made. I don't know what it was about Titanic in 1997, but it was exactly everything and more that I could dream of. I hadn't even seen the movie yet, and when I saw the previews, I knew it wouldn't disappoint. From the actual facts, to the cast, to the beautiful descriptions of each class, to the story of women's adversities, to the love story, to the classism, to the small details about the food on the ship, or down to Thomas Andrews changing the hands on the clock as the ship went down, I couldn't ask for anything more. I can go on forever about my obsession with this movie, but we'll be here forever. I mean, that's fine. I like being here forever. That's good. So thank you. All right. Next is Maria. And this was a DM from Instagram. Hello, LA. Thanks for a great podcast. I'm so happy every time I see the green dot indicating a new episode. Thank you. That's a huge compliment. The movie came out in 1998 in Sweden, where I live. I remember everyone at school talking about a movie about a sinking ship, and I was skeptical, to say the least. But then a documentary aired with the survivors' testimonials, and I was hooked and finally made it to the theater. I still remember the day I saw the movie for the first time. It really was like taking a time machine into a magical world with wonderful lighting, garments, interiors, not to mention the chemistry between Jack and Rose and the strength she found to break free from her old life. When my friends and I hung out, we would go upstairs in my parents' house and sit down on the sofa and watch Titanic on VHS. We loved the Jack and Rose parts, always found new things to comment on, and every so often we used to stop the movie before tragedy struck. Now, I haven't seen the movie for many years, but when Titanic was mentioned in Downton Abbey, I found my way back to the time machine. A time machine that still brings back the same feelings I felt as an 11-year-old all those years ago and gives me a sense of coming home. Whew. This makes me tear up. That's exactly how I feel. All right. Thank you, Maria. And then I've got one more written one, and this is from Emily. I was 7 when the movie came out, but did not go in theaters to see it. We found the double VHS at a local pharmacy and watched it with my mom. I loved it, but my mom covered my eyes at the parts with the gun. I get that. It's always been my favorite movie, and I've cried every single time I've watched it. A few years ago, I did a trip to Halifax, Nova Scotia, and visited some relatives, and we got a personal tour from my then-fiancé's uncle and went to the Maritime Museum. I had the urge to watch it when I got home, and the movie had a new meaning, seeing everyone die in the tragedy. Yes, and that is another theme that I see all the time when I, you know, email with people, talk to people, and through the submissions, that it's, you know, the love story is one thing, and then your relationship with the tragedy and the death at the end is another thing that has evolved as you've watched it over the years. All right, so that's it for the written submissions. So now I'm going to transition into the voice ones. So enjoy. I'm so grateful that you took the time to submit these. It's truly, truly special. All right. Without further ado, Titanic forever. Titanic forever.
Hi, LA. Longtime listener, first time caller. The 1997 Titanic had such a outsized impact on me. It's weird. I was 10 when it came out. I went and I saw it in the theater 3 times, which is kind of a weird sell for a 10-year-old kid to his parents that he wants to go see a 3-hour-plus epic romantic historical drama that features frontal nudity. And the first time I went and saw it, I think they were like, sure, whatever, kid, go for it. The second time, I think they figured, he wants to see boobs. We know now there's boobs. It's the boobs. But I got to go see it again anyway. And then the third time, I think they finally understood that I was just very captivated by the subject of the Titanic. And I think they knew that because, you know, in the run-up and directly after the release of that movie, there were so many television specials about the Titanic on Discovery, on TLC, on the History Channel, on network TV. And I swear I saw every single one. And so I think after they realized how much of my television viewing during the week was Titanic-oriented, they gave me the benefit of the doubt on that. The other thing I don't know if people remember is this was before YouTube or reliable internet connections for most people, really. And so if you wanted to see a clip from the film, you had to watch Entertainment Tonight or Inside Edition or one of these specials that was on TV where they would give you a sneak peek of the movie. And so some of these specials, which nowadays would get pretty poor viewership, were like must-see television because they were going to have a two-minute clip from the movie in it, from the most expensive movie ever made. For sure, the single shot as a kid that made the biggest impression on me was the guy hitting the propeller when he jumps off the back of the boat and flipping around and landing in the water. I had a couple friends as a 10-year-old who were not necessarily into Titanic, but were into boobs and were into seeing guys bounce off of a propeller. And so for them, it was worth the 3 hours to see that. That was a highlight. But my single favorite shot in the movie that really sticks with me today, that I think is really a perfect shot, is the shot that directly follows Jack's King of the World thing, where you get an unbroken sweep of the whole ship from bow to stern and then framed against the sea as it sails into the horizon. That was just something that had never been seen before on film at that time. And to know that it was completely computer generated, it's just as majestic as cinematography gets, and it still holds up really well. So yeah, after seeing that as a kid, I was completely hooked for life. When I got to college, I'm an audio engineer by trade, so I went to school for that. And in one of my college level courses, it was on soundtrack design and music for film. And I wrote my final essay on the music, James Horner's score, and the use of traditional Gaelic and Irish folk music in the motifs of the score. And then after college, I went on to visit, you know, all the major Titanic museums, the one in Belfast, the Luxor exhibit in Las Vegas, the sister museums in Missouri and Tennessee. And the Titanic is so unlike most other historical events in the sense that think of something like the Hindenburg, where we have this big dramatic image that we've all seen the photo. And then the more you learn about it, the more you educate yourself, the more you research, the more you read. It doesn't lessen the tragedy or lessen the impact of the event, but it definitely demystifies it somewhat, away from just that drama and that one moment of the photo that everybody knows. And Titanic's not like that at all. With Titanic, for one, it's kind of all in your imagination because there's not any photos from the night, from the event. There's very good eyewitness accounts, there's drawings, but there's not any firsthand footage of what happened. And Titanic is just something where the more you learn about it, it doesn't demystify it at all. It makes it even more interesting to learn more about the individual people on the ship, the highest strata of society, how they would behave in what they believed may have been the final moments of their lives, to know the backstory of Captain Smith, to know the backstory of the manufacturing of the ship. All of these things that the more you know, the more complex it gets. It's not demystified in the slightest. And that's why I think it's still, so many years on now, a really compelling story. But for me, that did all start with the movie, and it did all start around 1997, because it wasn't until the movie was coming out that a lot of these documentaries and TV specials started coming out focusing on the shipwreck. You know, it wasn't that the Titanic culture kind of sprung up until the movie. So I've really got to give credit where credit is due and say that it's just amazing the amount of growth the Titanic community has experienced over the last 25 years on the back of the 1997 film. And for that, I'll always be grateful. And grateful to you as well for what you're doing with this podcast. It's just tremendous. And it's great to hear somebody else who feels about this moment in history the same way that that I do and many others also. So keep up the good work.
I was 10 when the movie Titanic was released in theaters, and I became obsessed with it immediately. I dragged my parents to the theater 3 times to see it. This is the first time they had ever seen a movie more than once in a theater, and I can imagine only now how uncomfortable of an experience that must have been for the 3 of us to sit through this 3-hour movie 3 times. As soon as it came out on VHS the following October, we had a copy. I watched it almost every week. I knew exactly when tape one ended, when he says, "Mr. Ismay, I believe you may have your headlines," and when the second tape began. And so for my 12th birthday in 1999, I decided to have a Titanic-themed birthday party. So I made the invitations myself on Microsoft Word to look like boarding passes for a ship. There was a cake that had an iceberg and a Heart of the Ocean necklace on it. And there's a picture of me somewhere smiling, wearing a necklace from Claire's to look just like it. We went ice skating at the local ice skating rink to stay on theme. And I think the chunk of the birthday party sleepover was just us reenacting scenes from the movie, dressed up in clothes that were not period appropriate, but mostly my mom's dresses. One of my friends had a big hat box that she brought along because it reminded us of the hat boxes they brought onto the ship at the beginning of the movie. I, in very main character energy, was Rose, wearing a dress of my mom's that definitely did not fit. And we just acted out the scenes that I had fully memorized with the movie playing on in the background. Still one of the funniest memories I have, and definitely an insight into how I would delve very deeply into cultural obsession for something that I felt resonated with me. I'm happy to talk about it further, but what a great idea for the podcast.
All right, so how much does the movie 1997 Titanic mean to me? I saw it in the theaters about three times. My sister, who was in love with Jack, she wanted to make it very clear she was in love with Jack, not Leo. She saw it about 10 times. And of course, I loved the movie. I just loved how the sinking of the ship was portrayed. But I don't think I realized how much the film meant to me until maybe about 15 years later, when I realized I kept on going back to it because of the ending. So the very ending of the movie, when you see old Rose has actually, and you see the pictures, and she's accomplished everything that she said that she would without the love of her life there, and how Jack died and yet she was able to live her life and maybe live for the both of them. Whenever I need a pick-me-up or when I need a reminder to continue pursuing all the goals and passions that I have for my life, I look back at that two-minute scene and I realize, and it just, it encourages me so much, of course, because, you know, everyone who's passed away, you get to see them. And the fact that you have everyone from the very rich to the very poor, and they're all in the same boat, so to speak, that just really, really encourages me. And then finally, yes, so I'd say maybe about 2 years ago, I realized how much I adore Kate Winslet as an actress. I was watching another movie. And so now I've since gone back to rewatching Titanic many times. I have it in all formats, and yes, I will be getting it in 4K if it ever comes out in 4K. But I just admire Kate Winslet so much as an actress. So now I really notice her, even though I did have a crush on Leonardo DiCaprio when I was younger. I definitely just have a crush on Kate Winslet specifically. I think Kate more than Rose, but anyways, Rose is an amazing person as well. And because that led me back to Kate about 2 years ago, watching her films, it has also reinvigorated my acting career. So I had an acting agent about 15 years ago, and I got another agent when I realized that acting is finally my thing. I think I needed to experience life and traveling the world, experiencing different cultures first, before I can appreciate the hard work and experiences that go into being an actor. So thank you very much, Kate Winslet, who obviously means a lot to me now. Way more now than back in 1997. But of course, the movie is my second favorite of all time. First favorite is The Sound of Music, but you don't have to put that in. But again, it's all about pursuing your dreams. So I hope this helps. Bye.
Hey, LA. So the reason that I absolutely love this movie is because of the accuracy. I know James Cameron didn't get everything right, but the amount of research that he has put into this subject is absolutely incredible. And as a parent myself, it's gut-wrenching. And it's absolutely incredible to actually see history come to life.
Hello, this is Richard. I love the podcast. So I went to see Titanic at the cinema in the summer of 1998 when I was 11, and I really thought it was amazing. I mean, back then I loved everything about it, right down to My Heart Will Go On over the end credits. I feel that Titanic is one of those films that feels like a proper experience to watch. I mean, it delivers this grand spectacle and scale, and it brings this world and this ship and the disaster to life, right down to the background characters. And so that means there's that much more of an impact when the disaster does come. And it's all done with such detail, and you get so familiar with the ins and outs of the ship that I feel that more than any other Titanic film or TV series, James Cameron turned the ship itself into a character that we become familiar with. And then when you combine that with the familiar and compelling star-crossed lovers story of Jack and Rose, and the personal journey that Rose goes on while on the Titanic, it all clicks and it becomes a very memorable film, and it's great to watch. So for some time after I saw the film, I was very big on Titanic. I mean, I was always rewatching the film a lot on VHS, and I was also reading and watching documentaries and learning everything I could about the real Titanic. And then eventually there came this point where it wasn't cool to like the film, and that made me feel a bit embarrassed about it. And then it was re-released in cinemas in 2012, and I went to see it, and that was just a great experience seeing on the big screen again. I had such a like big smile on my face at so many parts of the scenes that I remember really liking on VHS. And I felt I could admit then that Titanic is my favourite film. It still is. And so obviously I'm very much looking forward to the next re-release in 2023. And while I've had plenty of other interests in the meantime, I've always stayed interested in the Titanic, and it's taken me to places like Belfast and Southampton and the Luxor exhibition in Las Vegas. And one year when I was doing National Novel Writing Month, I did a project on the Titanic. And that started with this film. So it has certainly impacted me.
I first saw Titanic when I was 13 years old. I'd heard about the movie at a New Year's Eve lock-in at the local YMCA and thought it sounded completely sappy and stupid. Why would Rose and Jack run up and down to upper and lower decks multiple times while the ship was sinking? Why go see the movie? We all know the ship sinks. Later that month, my parents were about to go see Titanic on a double date with our neighbors, who were family friends of ours, when they invited me to join them at the very last minute. My parents have always been cool like that. I thought the movie might be dumb, but I accepted. From the very first scene, I was captivated. I was in love with the movie. Not for the first or even the last time, but this would be the deepest movie love of my life. I loved Rose and Jack and Kate and Leo. I listened to the soundtrack on repeat. I read all I could about the special effects. I talked about the movie totally nonstop. I would see the film 5 or 6 times in the theater, all except one of those times with my best friend. I would pack my green and tan mini backpack with a Valentine's teddy bear beanie baby, a pocket pack of Kleenex, and some Jelly Bellies. The tears would start as soon as you could see Cora's doll's face on the ocean floor.
Oh, so what entranced me with Titanic? Why do I love it? Oh my gosh, where do I even begin? So I saw the film when I was 12, and I honestly don't know if this would have hit me at any other age. I just remember, I didn't know what the movie was about. I knew it was about the ship that sunk, that it was supposed to be unsinkable. But I left out feeling like I had, oh my gosh, I became a completely different person. Like, I feel like I transformed from my girlhood into the start of my womanhood, my adulthood with that movie. It was everything. It was the music and the fashion. Oh my gosh. And that the romance between Jack and Rose. And I mean, the fact that it didn't hurt to look at Leo DiCaprio, you know, that sure helped a bit. Again, oh my gosh, it's just Kate was so breathtakingly beautiful. I remember just sitting there being completely like enamored by her, and not even in a jealous way. It was just like, oh my gosh, I just can't stop looking at her. And why would I want to? She's just so breathtaking. Ultimately that movie just like shook me to my core. I, up until that point, what was I watching? Probably Disney movies or some kind of, you know, dumb PG-13 teen comedy. This is before the time of 10 Things I Hate About You and Never Been Kissed, and Clueless had come out, but, you know, I never had been so invested in a film where I felt so many emotions. Witnessing the tragedy and the pain of these people and their fear. I never felt so much, so intensely. I distinctly remember the scene where Rose gets on the lifeboat and she's going down, and we see her going down and down and down, and she's looking up at Jack and the, you know, the I'm sorry. Lack of words here. Like, that little distress firework goes off behind him, illuminating him. And the father's telling his daughters it's only goodbye for a little while. And knowing that, no, it's not. It's, he's going to die and they're never going to see him again. I just could feel my throat enclosing, and I just, Rose jumps on the boat and I start sobbing, and I don't stop until the credits are over. And even then I'm sniffling into the hallway of the theater. My friend still teases me. She's like, Emily, the whole movie theater was quiet and we could just hear you going in your seat. So that was it. It was like a drug. It was, I wrote about it in my journal, and I wrote, like, if this movie has changed my life, and it really has. And the relationships that I've made, not just in a sense that of what I'm interested in, and, you know, the actors that I want to follow, you know, Kate forever. And I joined a Titanic role-playing game online, and I had a crush on one of the writers there who wrote for Cal, and we ended up having an online romance for about 6 months, and I was 14. And in 1999, I still don't know how my parents were okay with me doing that. I met him in real life. My sophomore year of high school, I went to Europe on a school trip. My mom came with me, and we met at Paddington Station in London and went on a Beatles tour together. The sparks definitely had died down, but I mean, it's, Titanic was one of the primary, you know, interests that we had in common. And I haven't talked to him in probably since 2001. But the other relationship that really enriched my life for the better was my best friend, Jackie. I don't remember how I met Jackie. I don't remember if it was on the Kate Winslet fan club or if she was also in the Titanic role play, but we became email buddies. Found out we were the same age, or, you know, like you hope, because it's the internet in 1999. And eventually, like, I didn't feel like I really had close friends at school. I had friends that I could hang out with at school, but when I came home, I felt like I had no one else that shared the interests I had in Titanic and Kate and Leo, and I felt really lonely. And Jackie filled up those lonely gaps in my heart. And we went from being pen pals to talking on the phone. She lived in New York. So when 9/11 happened, I remember it took me like 3 days to get a hold of her. We lost touch later in high school. And then 20 years later, I thought I found her on Facebook, and she messaged me, "How did you find me? I've been trying to get a hold of you." And we finally connected IRL in New York City in 2019. And it was probably one of the happiest days of my life, meeting up with my Titanic bestie. And I never would have met her if it weren't for James Cameron and all of the work that he did. And, you know, even though we don't talk all the time, she's a really special person to me and always will be. So if you have any questions, feel free to reach out. I am more than happy to talk about my transatlantic electronic love affair. And thanks for putting this question out there and for all the work that you do.
Hi, LA. My name is Colleen, and I love your show. Thank you for making it. I realized recently that I don't have a specific memory of seeing Titanic for the first time, because it has been superseded in my brain by the memory of watching it 18 times in a row on VHS when I was 12 years old. So I didn't see it in the theater when it first came out because I was too young. I was just 9, but I saw it a few years later on VHS, and then there was a period of time when I would watch it every single night and cry my little heart out. 12 is a really emotional age, and I was an emotional kid, and I think that having an affecting story to sob over was really appealing to me. I've been having some realizations as I've been thinking back on my Titanic origin story,
The first of which is that this movie was an early bisexual awakening for me, and that young Kate and Leo imprinted on me in a way that I did not fully realize or appreciate until recently. I was just saying to my sister a few months ago that I think the reason why I have red hair, why I color my hair red as an adult, is because of Kate Winslet in Titanic, which had never been a conscious intention of mine. The reason why I love this movie is because it brings you in and it makes you love these characters and forget that this tragedy is going to occur. And then you go on this harrowing journey with these characters who you then love. And in the end, you're exhausted and bereft and cried out. But there's something meaningful in that emotional release. Back in March, after listening to many episodes of your show, I sat down to watch Titanic again for the first time in maybe 20 years. And I found it as affecting as a 34-year-old as I had as a 12-year-old. And one of the things that I'm really looking forward to in 2023 is getting to see it in theaters for the first time with a few friends of mine, one of whom has never seen it before. So thank you for bringing this film and Titanic, the historical event, back into my life. And thanks for making this episode. Bye.
Hi, LA. My name is Blair. I'm from Western Sydney in Australia. And I am excited but nervous to be sending you this voice note. So I apologize if my speech is really fast. It happens. I guess firstly, I just wanted to say that, of course, I love the podcast. It was a random but joyous discovery for me. I'm still a little bit behind. I listen to a lot of different things, but I'm having a lot of fun listening to the episodes that you've put out. I think it's really interesting, and you've managed to cover a lot of things that I don't think I've heard anyone mention before, which I guess speaks to the fascinating nature of Titanic as a whole. I'm not sure how obvious this should be, but as a child of the 90s, my introduction into the world of Titanic was the 1997 movie. I'm not sure whether I saw it in cinemas. I'd have to ask my mom. But rest assured, I viewed it on TV, VHS, and DVD about a million times since then. I think my brother owned the VHS, which I was a little bit jealous of as I got older. And now, thinking of that, I remember in year three, third grade once, came back from school holidays and had a task where we had to write like a recount, a journal of what we got up to on the holidays. And I distinctly remember writing that, you know, one fun thing I did one day started with, I went to the shops with my mother and my siblings. We bumped into some family friends, and while we're standing there talking, as you do, I was just thinking, like, we had already made plans to go home with our food and watch Titanic, and I was just like, oh, I want to go home and watch Titanic. Had I already seen it about God knows how many times by that point? Yes. God, yes. But I guess it speaks to the long-lasting impact that James Cameron's movie has had and continues to have, that we can all still look forward to seeing something that we've heard and seen back to front a multitude of times, because there are so many details and so many moments that make this movie iconic. And maybe if your mind works that way, you notice something different when you see it again. I've certainly had that moment. I guess another thing I wanted to bring up is another way in which the movie has impacted me from an educational perspective. I don't know if anyone else has a story like this. I'll be so interested to know if they do. But in my year 11 or year 12 English class, we had the topic of belonging that we did for quite a few months, and I distinctly remember writing either my trial final exam or a practice essay on that topic, and I actually wrote about Titanic, which, you know, was a great excuse to watch the movie again. Not that anyone really needs it, because it's amazing, but I did, and just thinking back on that now, I couldn't tell you what I wrote. I don't know. But I imagine it would have been something to do with the fact that, you know, the way Rose was feeling in her circumstances, it was obvious to us almost from the beginning that she knew she didn't belong where she was. She felt so viscerally uncomfortable, as we know, just by the voiceovers, she was not happy. And I guess, I think Jack's character really just serves as a catalyst, something I'm sure a lot of us have experienced, but just, you know, that moment in our lives or the thing we experience or a person we meet that makes us realize, look, I've got to make a change. I've got to get out of this situation. This is not good for me. And I think that's what he did. And so I kind of tied it back to that because she realized not only do I belong not in this world that I've grown up in, but maybe, just maybe, I belong with him. And I like to think maybe she thought in some way, you know, I owe it to myself to do this, just as we all owe it to ourselves to do things that, you know, really, really scare us. And I like to think maybe that's something that a lot of people have learned from the 1997 movie. You know, I certainly wouldn't be surprised if I hear anyone else say that. You know, I think Rose was quite brave in a way that maybe some of us relate to, some of us don't. But she was. She's amazing. And, you know, like you, and I'm sure a lot of other people, that for me is how I discovered Kate and Leo and all the amazing cast members. You know, I think that is also, honestly, maybe my biased opinion, one of the most brilliant movies ever made. And, you know, I think one thing most people can agree on, even if they don't love it, though I'm sure if I go and ask my parents and my siblings about this movie that we have all loved and enjoyed together over these last 25 years, it is also one of the most visually stunning films ever made. I don't know if I've yet to see anything that was quite like it. And the way this year is going, with how enraptured I have been with your podcast and the books that have been recommended to me that I'm just waiting to read, I'm sure I'll be watching it again before New Year's Eve. And just like I was in that story about third grade that I told you, I'm already looking forward to it. So that's enough for me rambling. I am sure you're working super hard to get this 1997 kind of throwback together. I'm so excited to hear it. And again, to catch up with everything else I haven't heard yet. Yeah, keep doing what you're doing. It is amazing and so inspiring to me and a lot of people. And yeah, just keep up the good work and happy holidays. Bye.
I love you, Jack.
Don't you do that. Don't you say your goodbyes. Not yet. Do you understand me? You're going to get out of here. You're going to go on. Winning that ticket, Rose, was the best thing that ever happened to me. It brought me to you. And I'm thankful for that, Rose. You must promise me that you'll survive. That you won't give up. No matter what happens. Promise me now, Rose.
I promise. I will never let go, Jack. I'll never let go.